It's another Sunday night in comedy, and tonight we're finding out why laughter really is the best medicine. From stand-up scenes in COVID recovery to an LA comic whose own brush with the big C launched him into a life on stage. I'm Dean Young, and we're about to go Inside the Joke.
Welcome to Inside Jokes on Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
Please, Mr. Bossman, I need this job more than you know. But he gave me my last paycheck and he sent me on out the door. Well, I need a dollar, 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 that's what I need.
Welcome back to an all-new Inside Jokes. It's a beautiful fall night in comedy. And, of course, we are brought to you by our good friends at Hakeem Optical. Helping you read pointless election results since 1967. How about that one? That's timely-ish. We're talking about why comedy and laughter really is the best medicine tonight. Because yes, we're coming out of the tail end of the biggest global pandemic in modern history. We've got comedy scenes in COVID recovery. Later on the show, we also have a special guest comic who actually started his life in stand-up because of a serious diagnosis, something that's Vince Tedesco, our producer's on the line. Definitely a topic that's close to the chest for us, Vince, of course. I mean, you yourself, you had your own brush with cancer. We've talked about that on the show. And of course, everybody who's been listening to this show for the last 6 years, the late, great Sandra Carusi. That was a huge thing we talked about on the air. Still a big part of our show with the Comedy RX. So it's a theme we know a little thing or two about this week.
Yeah. I like the theme and the kind of, you know, the tone of this show, because as you did say, laughter is the best medicine. And of all the medicines and medicine topics and conversations that are going on in the world, this still is the best one. Laughter
really is.
Will always be the best medicine.
And, you know, I mean, we had a full season of pandemic where we were checking in with comics everywhere going, how do we get through this thing? How do we sort of reshape the industry and keep audiences and keep comics working and blah, blah. So I think now we're in this nice spot coming out the other end of the tunnel. We're seeing not just the comedy scenes we know and that we covered on this show sort of bouncing back. They're in, like I say, COVID recovery. We're seeing new scenes spring up all over the place. So there's the fact that audiences really need, after the insane year and a half that we've had, audiences need to go out and watch live comedy again. People need laughter again. It's like this big spring thaw that's happening. And of course, a little later on in the show, we have Vinny out in LA who started comedy 20 years ago because he was diagnosed with a brain tumor. So, I mean, this was comedy literally. Comedy literally was the best medicine for him. So it's a nice, it's a feel-good theme. We are talking tonight about why comedy really is the best medicine. We are in COVID pandemic recovery mode in comedy. And if laughter isn't the best medicine for you, I don't know what to tell you. I can't help you. I guess there's always ivermectin, I guess. You could go pop some of those horse dewormers that our American friends are all about. I want to get some of those people on the show. Vince Tedesco, our producer's on the line. Vince, take a mental note. We need a panel of anti-vaxxers, anti-maskers, and horse pill people. How about that? That'd be good radio.
Load the panel with them.
That's a whole night right there. That's a whole panel. First up, though, we have a comic I haven't talked to in a while. He's dropped a brand new album and some videos to go along with it. We're going to find out what the whole process behind this was and what that was like recording during the pandemic. I don't know what stages were open, what clubs are open. Quincy Martin is on the line. How you doing, man?
Good, man. I'm good. Thanks for having me.
And for our listeners at home, I gotta point this out. I mean, the only people, this is radio, so nobody could see anything, but the people who follow us on Instagram, our listeners, they're gonna see a little bit of this. You're sitting in front of like 800 boxes of shoes.
Don't insult me. It's at least 1,000.
Not an insult. We've been talking comics for
broadcasting from Aldo tonight.
Yeah, we've had 2 seasons of pandemic comics on. They're like lying on the floor eating breadcrumbs, and you're sitting behind a mountain of shoes. I don't know. So obviously,
hey, you're Quinn, man. Embrace it. You're an original. Keep at it, brother.
You're good. Okay. But yeah, so you dropped this new album, and you have a bunch of videos that you pushed out. You're going viral with these videos at the same time. But you got this album, Girl Quinterrupted, which I love that title, by the way. I want to get into sort of what this album's all about, what went into it. What was like the timeline of putting this together? Because for a lot of comics, it was tough to get out there and record a new thing because everything was shut down. There was no stages to work it out on. What was this something you were working on for a while? Was this pre-pandemic or is this all pretty recent?
I think the political answer is I've been working on it my whole life. It started in November, really. And it just kind of hit me one day, like a light bulb went off and it was just a different idea that sort of came to me. And I just said, well, I'll do it this way, you know? So the music that you're hearing or me talking over the melodies and over the beats, that was just something that was an idea. And then I just pieced it together with what was available of my stand-up. You're right. I mean, the pandemic hit and stage time was super scarce. And it was kind of difficult to get out there and record a lot of stuff. The making of the music, I should say, I don't really like to say music because it's not, I'm not rhyming or anything on it, but what you hear that's melodic is a process that started in about November and we finished around February.
Well, and I mean, it's funny you say, you know, yes, you've been, as a comic, you've been working on this your whole life. That's always been a topic of sort of debate with a lot of comics, especially, you know, those old school road dog comics that have been around 30, 35 years. A lot of them are diehard, like you don't do an album until you're two decades in and, you know, you work your way up. We also live in a time now, and I think especially coming out of COVID, but we live in a time now where comics record their own stuff. They stream their own stuff. They put everything out digitally. For a lot of comics, it's like, yeah, I've been doing this 2 years, but it's time. I'm pumping out an album. I'm releasing this thing. What's your take on that? Do you think, does it just depend on the comic, or do you think there's sort of like a find a time when you're ready, pay your dues, hone this thing, and then push it out? Because you have been at stand-up for a long time now.
Yeah, absolutely. 19 years. So
there you go.
Congrats.
Thank you. I think what happens is, I mean, when you're around comedians, you realize from, you know, 3 months to 40 plus years, nobody thinks they're bad at it. So no matter what, they're going to do whatever they feel, whenever they feel is right. When they feel is right, it's probably 3 to 6 months, you know. And who are we to determine? I mean, the crowd determines, but is anyone really listening to the laughter? Or are they listening to their ego? In that regard, now that everything is more commercial, now that you can, quote unquote, put out an album and have it stream, and create your own record label, all of these things are now commercial. They're not discreet. They're not difficult to do anymore. And so we can imagine that now, with everything being commercial and easily accessible, that there is going to be more albums pumped out. And from there, it's kind of going to diminish the quality, which will allow people who are really good at this to kind of shine. Kind of no different than the NBA when they're allowing players to come out of high school and just get into the NBA. Well, a lot of those players that came out of high school who felt like they were ready for the NBA and were getting drafted, you know, they would get injured a lot earlier or had shorter careers or not as big of an impact on the sport. And it allows the players who stayed maybe 2-3 years in college to really hone and develop the game to enter into the NBA and become NBA superstars. So we're seeing the exact same thing in comedy where, you know, people are going to pump out albums, but they're just really going to fall flat. And then you're going to see people who've been doing it for, let's say, almost 20 years or plus, really be ready, put together a quality album, put everything into it and see it go number one on some of the streaming platforms.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I mean, because you're going to, I mean, yeah, you've been at this 2 decades, but you're going to put out this thing that, okay, I know this lives permanently out there. Once I push it out there, that's it.
Yeah.
You can put out this thing that you're like, I know it's ready. This is honed gold. This is good to go. I'm proud of this. Here it is, right? Because you're absolutely right. I mean, while in Toronto, we see that all the time. I mean, you get comics that, you know, they might play the side room at Comedy Bar every Monday night, and that's their crowd, and they're comfortable there, and they're rock stars in there. But as soon as you know, you throw them on the road and throw them into like Nowheresville, Saskatchewan to go play a Legion Hall or something, and they die. They just, you know, because they've never done it. They've never left sort of that incubator, right? So I guess I guess we will see more of this coming out of the pandemic too, because it's been an entire 2 years basically of people going, well, there's no stage time, there's no paid work. I got to figure out a way how to like get some downloads and make some money right now while everything's sort of paused, right?
And to be clear, that's not going to happen for them. So
yeah.
I mean, like, no, let's be fair. I mean, you're really not making any money until you're getting over probably 30 to 50,000 streams. So
well, I mean,
And those comics aren't getting those. So
No, they are.
The albums that are being put out, you're not going to get it unless you really put out something quality and really good, right? So you have to put out something that is it's not just, you know, I'm a rock star in a small venue. You have to have some seasoned experience, and all of that ends up in the album, and that gets picked up from various different parts where people are listening to it.
You got to be in it for the love of the game, the love of the craft, and mm-hmm. it's not going to happen overnight. I mean, when you've been 2 decades of doing stand-up in Toronto, how many shows have you done over the years where an audience would watch you on stage and then afterwards they're coming up to you going, this is great. I've never seen a real, I was in an open mic one time and it was awful. I didn't know that this is what stand-up was supposed to be like, you know?
Yeah. many times. Yes.
It is. But, so there you go. Audience is not the judge. You know, they're smarter. They're smarter than I think we give them credit for. I think we listen to ourselves too much, not the audience. All right, we're going to find out more about this album and these videos and what went into this. We're going to come back with more Quincy Martin right here on Inside Jokes.
Hey, I'm Tanisha Collins, and you're listening to Inside Jokes on Global News Radio. Everything around me, cream, get the money, dollar, dollar bill, yo. Cash rules, everything around me, cream, get the money, dollar, dollar bill, yo.
Welcome back to Inside Jokes, baby, right here on Global News Radio 640 Toronto. We are talking why comedy is the best medicine. Brought to you tonight by Ivermectin. How about that? We have comedian Quinn Martin on the line with us. Brand new album, Girl Quinterrupted, in the making during COVID. And also, Quinn, so you did also, you made a couple of videos to go along with this. I was watching Separate Bills last
week. Thank you.
I love how much, like you were saying before the break, it's not quote unquote a music album. Obviously it's a comedy right. album. It's a stand-up album, but music yeah. plays a big part into what you've done here. How much has music always sort of tied into that world for you? Has it been an influence? Because there's always that belief that every comic secretly wants to be a musician. But as Dave Chappelle said, every musician really wants to be a comic. Like we're like the comics are the real like rock stars now. Mm-hmm. For you, like how important is music flavored into your comedy?
Not important at all. I never I didn't care. I always love listening to music. It's just all it was when I wanted to do an album, I just didn't want to be, you know, the next talking head talking for an hour.
Yeah.
With some edited laugh tracks and some laughs in there, some edited I didn't want anything like that. Everything that you're hearing is raw, everything that you're hearing is real. And then when it came to the parts, the musical elements, I guess you could say I was influenced by, I really liked on Dr. Dre's 2001 when Ed Griffin, he did one of the interludes and he spoke over yeah. one of Dre's beats. That was one of my favorite things to hear. And then I always liked, you know, like Chris Rock when he was on Kanye West's album, Blame Game. Or what he did, No Sex in the Champagne Room. I always thought those kind of things were fun. And I just, I felt it was better because it still kept them as comedians. A lot of times you see comedians, they get into music and they actually start making music, you know, like, or you see like Kevin Bacon and he starts making rock music and it's like, all right, man, this act, you know. but if he acted in the music videos, you'd probably get a different take on Kevin Bacon that you'd really like. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. At the end of the day, I knew where my talents lied. So instead of actually trying to rap or sing or whatever it was, I just put comedy to and added a musical element to it.
Yeah. And it's sort of like you said, you didn't want it, you know, you didn't want it to just sort of drown in the stream with everything else and just be more talking. It is sort of more out of experience. It is funny though, in hip hop, that's sort of always been a thing that's been around forever. Like those interludes where it's, whether it's just like spoken word or it's a sketch or it's, you know, Wu-Tang putting in clips from old Kung Fu movies, whatever it is, but it's always been sort of this experience that you sort of come in and out of and it breaks the thing down for you. It's really nice what you've done here. And I mean, having the videos to roll out with that, we're living in a world right now where everything is all about having that viral hit and having that. So, okay, here's my album. Here's a thing to go along with it. And you can get the audience into that from there.
In ultra stunning 4K picture quality.
There you go. It really is. I was watching. I was watching your stuff last night. One thing I wanted to pick your brain on, because nobody's really been able to sort of pinpoint this. And I mean, yeah, you came up in the Toronto stand-up scene. You've been at this two decades now. I feel like we've never really been able to sort of pinpoint exactly what the flavor of Toronto comedy is. Because you think of New York, you think of those little cult rooms and, you know, tough as nails audiences. It's a stand-up mecca. You think of LA, people go there for showbiz. They go there to act, do sketch, improv, blah, blah, all that stuff. Toronto, I don't know, man. It's like we think about alt comedy 10 years ago and we think of like safe rooms right now. But is there a flavor that really to you speaks of Toronto comedy? Like what is our identity in this scene, do you think?
I think that it's kind of more goes with the trend rather than creates it, unfortunately. And I think that's what's holding a lot of people back. So I think that now comedy has turned more reputation based than skill based. So you'll see a lot of people who are extremely good, not necessarily get much advancement in terms of media, as opposed to people who are extremely liked. And we don't see that in American comedy. So that's why a lot of times when somebody has a really good skill set and they start touring, they start picking up a lot more steam elsewhere because it's just based on their skills. So I think more the Toronto comedy scene is more whatever the trend is than anything else.
You think that's part of, because we do sort of have this identity crisis in Canadian comedy, because we have this weird thing in Canada where, you know, comedy is like our biggest export. That's what we do. We create comics, yep. But then they go stateside and that's it. We don't really have, we can't really pinpoint what our own identity is. Do you think that's because we've always treated Toronto, because it's our main hub in comedy, we've always just treated it as that final launch pad into New York and LA? It's sort of like, yeah, you come to Toronto, get JFL and a couple big gigs, get your visa and take off. We've never had, like, you've been here, you've stayed here. Do you think it's because we haven't had enough comics that are here building something here and giving us our own flavor?
A little bit of both. I think what you're saying is right. And I think what I'm saying is also accurate. You know, I think there's a pie chart and there's a lot of different factors. But one of the biggest factors is definitely the amount of money that people are making in the U.S. And I think that's part of it as well. You know, you can be a comic in the U.S. and there are comics that I have crossed paths with in the U.S. that never heard of, never seen them, never nothing. Easily making $250,000 a year, and they are, you know, phenomenally good. So they're not getting any in the media, but they are getting advancements financially, and that also plays a huge factor. So I don't think a lot of that stuff is really infused in Canadian or at least in Toronto comedy. But that's why you have to create your own opportunities. Thankfully, things are more commercial now for you to create your own opportunities, but. You know, you can also create your own opportunities by being the person who's in front, the front runner of your own brand. You know, the small things, you know, after every show, I always make sure I thank everybody that comes, having merch to sell, having a great, different, unique, never before done comedy album. And of course, working on the skills, actually going on stage and trying to be the best comedian as opposed to just trying to get a couple of cheap laughs.
And I mean, being able to do the stuff that goes along with it. I mean, like, you've been around, you're doing this, you're building your own merch, you're building your own brand, you're coming on this show and you're very comfortable talking about this album and breaking it down. It's a huge difference. I mean, on this show for the last six seasons before when I was doing Sirius, you know, the difference between American comics and Canadian comics was huge a lot of the time. Americans, it doesn't matter where they're from, like nowhere, Ohio, they come into the studio, they're ready to talk, they're ready to plug, they're ready to have a good time with it. A lot of times we'll get some incredibly talented Canadian comics, but you put a microphone in front of them and put them on the air and they just like freeze up. They don't know how
to react. Exactly. Yeah. Thanks for not calling me in 6 years. I appreciate that.
Every 6 years we'll get you on. No, I love what you've done here, man. And it is something totally original. It's nice to see, especially after a time period where so much stuff just kind of went on pause. It is nice to see comics with that hustle pumping out good new stuff. Obviously, absolutely. It's working. You got the mountain of shoes behind you.
This didn't work,
Honestly, we could do this all day. Before we do let you go, though, Quinn, I want to make sure. So where can people, first off, check out these videos, of course, and also get a hold of the new album, Girl Quinterrupted.
Okay, so check it. The album is called Girl, Quinterrupted. You can just type that into any streaming platform. It's on Tidal. It's on Spotify. Apple Music, iTunes, and it's on Deezer. It's on everywhere you can find. You could even Shazam anything you hear. Also, if you want to see the videos are appearing on YouTube. Just check my YouTube channel. If you can't find me, just put Quinn C. Martin and you will find me. It's Quinn, Q-U-I-N-N, C, just the alphabet, and then Martin, M-A-R-T-I-N. You'll find me on YouTube. All the videos are there as well. The merch is available at duckhuntchamps.com. Please remember that the album is by Quinn C. Martin and the East Scarborough Duck Hunt Champs. So you can get some merch there as well. It's the best album out. I promise you, this is literally the best comedy album you're probably ever going to hear in your life.
I love that hustle. We need more of that in Canadian comedy, especially now more than ever. I would say we will have to check back in with you soon, man. Everybody check out this album, Girl, comma, Quinterrupted, and of course, the videos to go along with it. Quinn Martin, thank you so much, man. I love it.
I appreciate you. Thank you for having me.
All right. We'll talk to you soon, man.
Absolutely. Peace.
Hey, I'm Sam Morrell. You're listening to Inside Jokes. That's, you know, the inside of a joke. It's kind of like the inside of an Oreo cookie. That's the good stuff. No one wants to just hear a joke. You want to analyze it to death.
Back to Inside Jokes right here on Global News Radio 640 Toronto. And tonight we are, of course, talking why comedy really is the best medicine. Brought to you by Hakeem Optical, helping you stand 6 feet away from everyone you love since 2020. And tonight's show is also brought to you by Ivermectin. If comedy doesn't work for you, take a horse pill. That one's for our dozen or so American listeners. Thank you again to Quinn C. Martin here in Toronto. Now we're going out to the West Coast. We're switching gears. We're heading out to LA. First timer on the show. Very excited to have this guest on, especially because of our theme tonight. We have Vinny Fastline on the air. How you doing, man?
What's up, man? Thanks for having me, guys. Vince, two Vinces in one show, you guys.
Right? Two Vinces, one show. That's a viral, nice.
Get your money's viral right. Video right there.
We got to go back. What's ivermectin?
That is the horse deworming pill that
Joe Rogan took.
Yeah, that some of the American folks were taking instead of the shot.
Deworming pill, like a vaccine kind of thing?
Yeah, well, that's, some people said it was like a vaccine, I guess, but it's a horse pill. Yeah. Who knows? I mean, 20-year-olds have been taking ketamine for decades now for a fun time, so who knows? I don't know. It's all about medicine tonight. But it is interesting, Vinny. So we were kind of, you know, earlier with Quinn Martin, we were talking about how a lot of comedy scenes are sort of going through COVID recovery, basically, right? Like clubs opening back up, tours happening again, festivals, all that stuff, and scenes sort of rebuilding after all this stuff that's gone on. With you, we really are talking about why comedy is the best medicine. And for us on this show, it hits close to home. I mean, our own producer, Vince Tedesco, had his own bout with cancer a few years ago, came through remission. Our host, our original host that I did this show with, Sandra Carusi, passed away a few years ago, but she had a battle with cancer. And we talked about it for years on the air. It was very well covered on this show. You, as a comic, you have a very unique and interesting and really like life-affirming sort of origin story as a comic. So you started off, 21 years ago now? You were diagnosed with a brain tumor?
Yeah. When I was like 13 years old, I had a brain tumor. So, I couldn't do sports. So comedy was kind of my outlet to survive high school, you know?
And what do you mean? Like that's, if something that huge and that jarring hadn't even happened, I mean, that's an incredibly young age to get into the comedy world to begin with. We've talked to a few comics over the years, you know, whose parents would take them to like the Yuck Yucks and stuff like that. And they're like 15 and they would go up on stage, but it's pretty rare. And a lot of those sea turtles sort of don't survive the swim, you know. For you, I mean, was it just sort of this big like aha moment where you went, well, I'm facing this huge thing, I want to jump in and do this thing? Or was comedy something you always sort of were wanting to approach anyways?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I was always really silly. When I was a little kid, I kind of wanted to be an actor. I think my mom pushed me into this comedy class after my brain surgery, and it was at a college, community college. You actually had to be 18 to get in, so she lied about my age. And I got into this like comedy class where you had to write jokes. They taught you what to do. And then at the end, we had to do our final was do comedy at this little theater in Pittsburgh. So that was 16. I was 16 years old and I had to do like comedy for my first time. So yeah, I think a lot of it had to do with my mom. I was also chasing a lot of fears too at the time, trying new stuff. Cause you know, I was a little bit more bold after that surgery. And then I remember I didn't do it for a few years. So a few years later, I won a comedy competition in the middle of nowhere. So I thought I was good. It was like me against lumberjacks. Of course I was going to win, you know, they just, So I just, I won this competition and it made me feel funny, you know? So, yeah. I was actually just telling this story the other day. After the competition, it was so funny because if you won the competition, you got to do comedy one more time. Like, I don't know if I would have done it again. So the next time I did it, I got to open for a local country band and they had like 700 people there. And I don't know how I did it. I don't even remember what I said because nobody gave a shit about comedy. They're just like, yeah, bring out the different forever or whatever. You know, they just had this local band there. And it was fun. It was like, wow, this is cool. You know, I got to sit on their tour bus. And yeah, it was a good time. So I took it seriously after I had a few lucky wins in comedy, you know?
That's a huge tumultuous time in your life to get into it too. I mean, well, obviously you're facing that diagnosis. You're facing this very real, I mean, something that most adults wouldn't really know how to wrap their head around and wouldn't really know how to confront. And on top of that, you're a kid, you're 13 years old. Like that's a time in your life where everything's upside down and you're trying to stumble around, figure yourself out. For you, did comedy make a lot of that stuff easier in a way? Did it give you sort of this like suit of armor to put on and go and like work stuff out on stage? Was it sort of therapeutic in a way like that?
Yeah, that fire,
heard the fire alarm again.
Oh my God. I hope to God it doesn't go off the whole time, dude. It's great. That'd be awesome if I'm just out there with my neighbors in their underwear the whole time. Just like, yeah, guys, doing Canada radio. Meet all these LA freaks. Yeah, I mean, wait a second. we got to run that back again. We said we were talking about trying these bold things.
Yeah, I mean, especially, I mean, let's, even if you could take away the diagnosis, obviously, that's a whole massive life moment to face down. You're doing that and jumping into comedy at the same time at a time in your life where you're a kid, everything's awkward and brand new. I mean, that's a huge leap, man. I mean, did that sort of, in a way, was comedy therapeutic? Like, did it let you work out a lot of this stuff?
Yeah, I don't think I recognized that at the time, because when you're young, you don't really see all the problems in front of you. But yeah, I mean, it got me through a lot. Like I said, I moved to Pittsburgh with my mom too. My parents split up at the time, but I moved to Pittsburgh and everybody that was cool in that town was playing sports. It was just a sports town.
Yeah.
There was nothing else. So, you know, I wasn't fitting in that easily right away because I wasn't able to play any. And then I did comedy, but I didn't do it all throughout high school. You know, I kind of really took it seriously, went to college. And then after college, I was like, why didn't I do it? So after college, I really took it seriously, but I'm sure it helped me get through it. It gave me a little confidence boost. You know, it took a lot of balls to do it.
Well, and
No, I'm just happy I got back. You know, I'm just happy if I didn't have those moments where I won a little competition and, oh, I got to open for, you know, this band, I might not have been like, why don't you go back and do it? You know, maybe I didn't think I was going to be good enough, but I thought I was going to be good enough. So.
Well, and I mean, now, of course, yeah, you've been based in LA for years, you know, you're regularly playing the Improv, you're doing Laugh Factory, you're doing The Store, you're going on the road, you're hosting shows. It's just what you do now. It's your career now. I am curious, though, those early years in Pittsburgh, you know, earlier in the show, we were talking about how here in Toronto, this is obviously our main comedy hub in Canada. This is where sort of everybody ends up in the country. We've never really been able to figure ourselves out as a scene, though, because New York is right there. So we, you know, we always sort of compare ourselves to New York. We kind of get dwarfed by that in a lot of ways. Of course, comics will use Toronto as this sort of springboard into the States. What was that Pittsburgh scene like? I mean, what was the comedy flavor in that town? How much of a scene was there at that time?
There was a Funny Bone. It shut down. That was like the first place that I did in an open mic, you know, when I got out of college or, you know, end of college. And there was a Pittsburgh Improv. So there was a, you know, a nice sizable, cool club where the big names would come into town. I remember I got into a few open mics and the booker liked me, and they had in names that would do the whole weekend, just like any road club. And Sebastian Maniscalco was one of my favorites at the time. He was just off of Comedy Central and he just blew up, and I was watching his special. And then they asked me, hey, do you want to open for Sebastian? And that was the first weekend that I got paid. I got to work with somebody famous. I got to be in front of hundreds of people. And that was like, man, this is so cool. So then the club would bring you back. If you got to work that club, then you got to feel like a real comedian, you know? So I was fortunate to open for a lot of different people that came into town there, you know, just names that would come by: TJ Miller, Sebastian, Carlos Mencia, Pablo. I mean, there's so many different random people coming in. That was awesome. Yeah. I don't know. I probably never would have moved out to LA if I didn't get to start doing that.
Which, by the way, I mean, a lot of comics we talk to that have, you know, career comics that have been at this for 10, 20 years, they always sort of remember those first big name comics they got to work for and open for, but they more even than that experience of being on stage at that show, they remember the green room. They remember this comic said this to me and gave me this little push, this little nugget of advice, this little encouragement. Was there somebody like that for you earlier on who was like, yeah, keep at this, kid. Like, you should be doing this.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Sebastian and Pablo Francisco were both telling me, you know, like, yeah, Sebastian was telling me how he saved up money and went out there and how much he hustled and worked at it. And, you know, Pablo was just like, you know, keep working at it, record all your sets, don't hang out the clubs too long, but, you know, go all the time, but don't stay too long, and just, you know, keep working at it. So, I mean, they both really gave me encouraging words, you know. They both just said, you should do it. You know, if you love it, you got to do it and just work at it and get real reactions too. So it's pretty helped.
Open mics in front of other comics kills the soul after a while.
Yeah, dude.
I do like how you described the Pittsburgh scene as there was two clubs. One of them was really good. The other one shut down, which is perfect because we have a Springsteen song in the show, which is like, that's every Springsteen song ever, is just the thing shut down. The thing we worked at shut down. All right, we're going to come back with more Vinny Fastline, who, again, I mean, we love your story of how you got into stand-up so much. It's such a part of what we're talking about this week. And we're going to find out what the LA scene is like right now, too. It's been a minute since we checked in there. We'll come back with more Vinny right here on Inside Jokes.
Yo, yo, hey, this is Little Darren Frost, and you are listening to Inside Jokes on 640. I'm coming for you. The dog days are over. The dog days are done. The horses are coming, so you better run. Run fast for your mother, run fast for your father. Run for your children, for your sisters and brothers. Leave all your love behind. You can't carry it with you if you want to survive.
Welcome back to Inside Jokes right here on Global News Radio 640 Toronto, and of course streaming coast to coast, North America wide on the Global News Radio Network. Out in LA, we have Vinny Fastline on the air with us. We were talking before the break, of course, very unique origin story in comedy. You got diagnosed with this brain tumor. On top of that, you're a kid. You're a 13-year-old kid. You jumped in and tried comedy. You were telling us before the break, you know, those first sort of big names that you got to open up with coming up in Pittsburgh, Sebastian Maniscalco and all these comics sort of giving you your first push. One thing I'm curious to pick your brain on is, do you remember your first good, healthy bomb where you just ate it? Because Vinny, you're doing all right now. I mean, you're touring, you're on the road, you're working with name comics, you're a regular at all these sort of cult heritage stages in LA. You've made a career out of this stuff. I think it is healthy and important every once in a while for a comic to just really just eat it and have a good
healthy bomb, dude. How long of a radio show do we got? Jesus Christ. I could take up your whole morning. Yeah, I actually, it's funny because the first night of that Sebastian Maniscalco weekend was a pretty hefty bomb. I actually talked to him about it. It's pretty funny because I tried, because you do a full weekend, you do a bunch of shows, one Thursday, two Friday, two Saturday, one Sunday. So the first Thursday, I was trying this thing in the studio where I would record thoughts in my head. I would have thoughts. You have thoughts in your head. I would record them. And then on stage, I would play it. So like, it would be a joke about how everybody thinks about sex all the time. Yeah. So I would have like a monologue and sex would come in between. And I would just have like, I tried to make funny banter through like the thoughts, but I wouldn't say anything. And then I would try to incorporate my jokes. Like, you know, if I was on a date and a girl bought extra appetizers and I'm just like, oh my God, slow down, I don't have money. You would hear that over the thing. As I'm trying to act, it was too much. The sound, like, unless the timing was on, which the guy in the booth wasn't on with me, it was so bad and awkward. And it was like, oh my God, I was eating it alive. And I had to finish. So the next day I dropped it. I was just like, I'm not doing that again. But I tried something, you know, it was so bad though. Oh my God, it was like, get me off this stage. If I didn't have to come back, like, for the rest of the weekend, I probably would have, like, all right, comedy's not for me.
But I think that's the moment right there, right? Because that's the moment, that's that first fork in a road where a lot of that, it sort of separates the hobbyists, right? It's a moment where you go, okay, well, do I keep at this or do I walk away? And a lot of people walk away, but it's that moment where you go, okay, now it's just all about tomorrow night's show. I got to put this behind me and just keep at it. And when you can do that, especially at that young of an age and in front of, like, you know, one of your comedy giants, that's huge.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty crazy, dude. I mean, bombing will keep you humble. You'll do it three, four years. Like, you think years in, you got it. You're like, oh, I got this. And then you'll still bomb 5 years in. Yeah. You'll have a night where you're like, what was that? So, yeah, it keeps you humble.
Do you think that's when that happens, by the way? Do you think it's those shows where you walk into with that mindset of like, ah, I got this. Like, if you aren't walking around backstage, 8-miling it and, you know, working the stuff through your head, if there isn't a little bit of that nervous energy, I think you need that, right? To really go out and grab them by the throat. Cause I think it's those nights where you show up to a show and you go, ah, I got this, whatever. And in a way you're almost, I don't want to say winging it, but when you don't have that sort of nervous energy, I feel like that's a time where a lot of comics, that's when they eat it.
I don't know. Sometimes, you know, you don't need the nervous energy. Being prepared is important, you know, knowing your set list. I've definitely had nights where I was not as prepared and it wasn't as sharp. So, it's just a matter of how often are you getting up? Like the night when I'm getting up every single night, if you're a comic and you're doing comedy once a week, you're just not doing comedy. If you're not doing comedy 5 days a week, you're not in it. You're not doing it. You got to be doing comedy 5 days a week. Getting up as much as you can, open mics anywhere you can, because that's how you get good. Like, even in this town, guys that are working the most are the funniest. It's not about how famous you are. You can be the most famous person out there. If you're not working out your bits and getting on stage, you get a grace period of 5 to 10 minutes, and then the rest is kibosh.
There we go.
Yeah.
It really is. It's a hustle. It's such a lifestyle job. You have to be working every night. You got to be, like you say, you got to be hitting those mics. Doesn't matter. Not every night's a club. Not every night's a festival. Sometimes you have a new bit or, you know, some new material that you have to just literally go and say it somewhere. It's like the comedy gym. You got to go hit a mic somewhere. You got to put in that time.
Yeah. Yeah, no, totally.
Which, by the way, what does right now coming out, because we were checking in with New York Comics a couple weeks ago about this. Before we let you go, what's the scene in LA looking right now post-COVID? Because a lot of those stages out there, a lot of those rooms really are, you know, they're cult rooms. They're career makers. You get to go do some stage time on there, and that sort of launches you on your way, gives you that. Is that scene sort of coming back from all this now?
Yeah. I mean, during the pandemic, it was a lot of outdoor shows, you know, that had some pretty cool venues that would do outdoor shows. They're fun. And then, the clubs opened back up. You know, the Laugh Factory, Improv, Comedy Store, all the clubs are back. And these outdoor shows that were successful, Jam in the Van, Supernova, they're back too. I run a Wednesday show that's an outdoor show. It's Prohibition Comedy every Wednesday. It's, you know, it's a little underground room that's really cool. Actually, New York Bathtub Gin is Stone Street is the base, is the bottom, Stone Street Cafe. And then Bathtub Gin, the speakeasy's upstairs. We're going to move it upstairs too. But the New York spot, that's pretty hot. So these rooms are back. You know, I mean, yeah, the LA scene's great. You know, this is where a lot of comics are. So yeah, all the clubs I'm fortunate to be a part of, and that stage time to be on with those lineups, man, it's like a dream come true. So
that's for comics. There we go. That's our cue
to by the bell, man.
That's our light. Vinny, before
I gotta go to class, guys, let me get my lunchbox.
We could do this all day. Before we do let you go though, man, where can our listeners find all your stuff and find you online?
Dude, I love how I got lit by a fire alarm. That's just like, that's like, wrap it up, dude. Wrap it up.
Our producer in Toronto is like, I don't even have to tell these guys anything. Now they know.
That's amazing. Are you guys pulling the alarm out there? How dedicated are you to get me off? All right, this guy, he's ranting. Me. All right. Yeah, so you can follow me on all the social media platforms, Vinny Fastline, Fastline, Vinny. Yeah, Instagram, TikTok, all this stuff. I tour with a lot of guys. So I just got off the road with Michael Rapaport, and I did shows with David Spade, Harlan Williams, Ian Edwards, Drew Lynch. I toured all of Canada with Dane Cook. So I'll eventually be back on my own with you guys, hopefully, in your city and the rest of Canada. And yeah, I'm in LA all the time and I travel. So look me up. I'll post my dates and I appreciate it.
There we go. Vinny Fastline, thank you so much, man. Appreciate it.
No problem, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, stay safe, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon.
All right. That is our show. Thank you again to Quincy Martin. Don't forget to check out Girl Quinterrupted and all the videos that go along with that. And of course, out in LA, Vinny Fastline. Check him out. Look for upcoming dates. That's our show. That's our panel. Laughter is the best medicine. But don't forget, you can listen to all of our episodes right back to the beginning on Global News Online. We'll be back next week.
Hi, this is Alicia Carusi, and you're listening to my aunt, Sandra Carusi's Comedy RX.
This week's Comedy RX features the comedy and musical stylings of Quincy Martin.
It's separate bills.
Separate bills.
It's separate bills.
Separate bills.
She says she got an OnlyFans, man. That's separate bills.
I get separate bills.
Premium Snapchat, too. That's separate bills. She says she still talk to her ex. Yeah, that's separate bills.
Yep.
She on a 6th beer.
What?
She told you she gotta work early in the morning. Man, that's separate bills.